Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota National Guard, discuss the recent stand down here in Minneapolis, and check in with the Minnesota National Guard's Command Sergeant Major. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
One of Minnesota's great innovation stories occurred on September 26, 1920, when three Minnesotans rented a Curtiss Oriole biplane to launch an eight-day flight to Washington, D.C. Their mission? To be the first federally recognized National Guard flying squadron. Thanks to pilot Ray Miller and his colleagues, the 109th Minnesota Observation Squadron not only achieved this honor in 1921, but Minnesota also took a leading role in advancing aerospace technology that benefited commerce and military preparedness. From the days of Lucky Lindy, Minnesota aviation has played a vibrant and active role in keeping a watchful eye in the sky. And today, the 133rd Airlift Wing continues on in that great tradition of performing missions worldwide, which focuses on security, disaster relief, and humanitarian missions. The 133rd Air Wing's federal mission is to maintain well-trained, well-equipped units available for prompt mobilization during war and to provide assistance during national emergencies, such as natural disasters or civil disturbances. The 133rd Airlift Wing flies the workhorse of aviation, known as the C-130. The C-130 Hercules is a four-engine, turboprop, military transport aircraft capable of using unprepared runways for takeoffs and landings. It is used routinely as a cargo transport aircraft, but may also be used in a variety of other roles, including airborne assault, search and rescue, aerial refueling, and aerial firefighting. The Air National Guard provides almost half of the Air Force's tactical airlift support, combat communications functions, aeromedical evacuations, and aerial refueling. In addition, the Air National Guard has total responsibility for air defense of the entire United States. When the 133rd is not mobilized or under federal control, they may perform missions such as emergency relief support during natural disasters, search and rescue operations, and support to civil defense authorities. I salute the proud men and women of the 133rd Airlift Wing.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota Air National Guard, Colonel Dan Gabrielli. Colonel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
Sir, that was a pretty good introduction to your unit from the Adjutant General.
Sir, he stole my thunder, Tom. You know, there's my mission brief in a nutshell, and so anything I can add to it, I will.
Well, I think we can dig in a little bit deeper, sir, but first I'd like to start with a little bit of your background. How long have you been in the Armed Services?
I have been in the Armed Services 27 years. It'll be 28 years this November.
And some active duty and some guard?
Yes, sir. 10 years I have active duty, and ever since 1998, I've been in the Air National Guard active duty. I was a T-37 instructor pilot. I flew C-5s at Dover Air Force Base, and then in 1998, I got out, came back to my home state, and joined the Air National Guard. And I've been with them ever since. I've been in a traditional status, which is part-time. I've been in an AGR status and a technician status, and then most recently, the last couple of years, I was the Deputy Director for Airspace and Cyber Operations out at Andrews Air Force Base at the Air National Guard Readiness Center. And then I returned here to the wing in April and took command April 16th.
And, sir, I see you're still wearing wings. Are you still able to log some hours flying?
Yeah, I sure am, Tom. Not as much as I'd like to, but it's always a relief when I can get out there and put the office behind me for a little while and enjoy flying. Not as much as when I was a squadron guy, but I still do get out, and I do have to stay current and qualified as a rated air pilot with the airlift wing.
So if you're not busy as a commander putting out fires, you get to go have some fun flying a C-130.
Absolutely.
Sir, can you tell our audience you have, I think, eight C-130s. What model are they, and a little bit about their capabilities?
So we have the eight C-130 H-3 models, and like I said, General Nash did a good job basically giving a basic overview of what we do. Our wing consists of roughly 1,200 folks total and about 280 full-time personnel, and we have eight C-130s, and basically our mission is to we have the dual status mission. We do the warfighting mission for the federal Title 10 when we're called upon and mobilized. And as everybody can imagine, since 9/11, that's happened at a much higher rate, and our operations tempos remain quite high. In our state mission, our domestic operations mission, we are defense of the homeland. And the governor, of course, is our commander-in-chief. We work through the TAG. And we respond to any civil unrest, natural disasters, and those kind of things. We can put in a state active duty title, our status for those purposes. And but everything we train to is just like big Air Force. We're trained to the same standards, same operating procedures, and everything we do in our warfighting mission, those same skills are used for our domestic operations mission. So it's a nice blend.
So just like the Army National Guard, the dual status, you have the federal status where you go active duty and support the nation, or you've got the local status where governor can call you up for, as you said, natural disasters, floods, earthquakes, forest fires, those type of things.
Absolutely. And that's what separates us from the active duty and also our reserve component brethren as well, that we do have that dual status. So even though we have that unit right next door to us, which is the Reserve Air Force unit, same kind of airplane, same mission, they don't have that defense of the homeland status that we do.
And a little different color.
Absolutely.
Sir, we're blessed in Minnesota to have a training facility up north called Camp Ripley. And we've talked about it a lot with Colonel St. Salver, the camp commander, and a lot of the soldiers that have been in here. But I think that you go up there with your C-130s and practice dropping some loads and do some touch and goes and things. How valuable is that to you?
Absolutely valuable, Tom. We couldn't do our mission without it. For our just proficiency sorties for landings and touch and goes, we can go to Rochester, Duluth, a number of fields. But to do our core mission of what we, our intra-theater tactical airlift, we need Camp Ripley. We need it for their dirt airstrip to practice our assault takeoffs and landings on a short dirt field. We need their drop zones to be able to do our airdrops. We work with the FAA to get the airspace coordinations right, and we do airdrops up there, night vision goggles and night vision goggle takeoffs and landings, low-level routes, and all sorts of stuff. That is the core of what we do for our mission. We wouldn't be able to accomplish if it wasn't for Camp Ripley.
Colonel, and when I was in Vietnam, we had C-130s and C-123s, but I always thought of a C-130 as a kind of a flying tank. It's a really durable aircraft that's been around since 1951.
Right. I suppose compared to the C-123, it did seem like a big tank, but compared to some of the strata lift out there, I'm always still amazed that people think it's a gigantic airplane. It's really about the same size and weight as a 737. In the commercial world, that's pretty small size, narrow-body aircraft, but the things it can do, it is, for all practical purposes, a heavy airlift aircraft.
Sir, you mentioned up at Camp Ripley, they've got some dirt strips where you can take off. I can remember in Vietnam, some of the airstrips we landed on were pretty short, and they'd rev those 130s up pretty high and kind of stand on the brakes, and they'd take off almost straight up, it felt like to me.
Absolutely.
You get a chance to practice some of that?
We do the landings up at Camp Ripley on that 3,500-foot dirt strip. The takeoffs we don't do, we'll go over the main runway to do the takeoffs, because there's always a risk factor that you're taking a certain amount of risk by doing those landings and takeoffs, and the takeoffs being a little bit of a risk. The procedures are the same. You just practice the same short field takeoff procedures on a long runway, but the landings we do on the short runway.
Sir, I wanted to ask you, we've had General Hamler on the show, and he told us about some of the medevac missions that he's flown on the C-130s.
Absolutely. In medevac, we have our aeromedical evacuation squadron and in the operations group right with the flying squadron, and they're an integral piece. When they go deploy, they go to they can deploy to the fields themselves, but most likely they'll deploy to some of the bigger fields and then go in on the tactical airlift, strategic airlift. They can fly on any type of aircraft. Well, the C-17 and C-130 and the KC-135s to do their mission, and they'll go in theater, take out the wounded, and then they'll get them from a forward operating base to a larger base, and then from that larger base to one of the European bases, and then on home. And they can work anywhere in that chain of airlift home for those folks. So they're critical, caregivers and life sustainers, and their value is huge. And we're lucky to have a squadron of great ones in our wing.
And a very versatile aircraft, C-130.
Absolutely. And like I said, we're intra-theater, not inter-theater. So we're kind of, I always think of us sort of the regional airlines of Air Force Airlift. We go hub and spoke out of the big fields in Afghanistan to the forwarding operating bases, sort of like a shuttle airline going back and forth to the hub. Getting to the theater is about a four-day trip, and it's not the most comfortable plane to ride in the back of, but it's you see a lot of places in 4 days and get to stay overnight, and it's always a fun ride there and a fun 4 days back, and then a very rewarding deployment in the middle there.
And, of course, that's what you're trained for most of the time, isn't it?
Yes, sir. We're low and slow, and so we're not like your modern comfort airliner, but when it gets down in theater, we do the job.
They count on them, and the C-130 is really the backbone of the Air Force over there, isn't
absolutely
it?
And in the last conflicts we've been involved in, it absolutely is a very valuable I'd say, among the most valuable pieces of aircraft equipment being used in the contingency operations we're involved in right now, because it's exactly our bread and butter, and the sweet spot of what we do is what they need to do over there.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the 133rd Airlift Wing. We've been speaking with the commander, Dan Gabrielli, colonel at the 133rd Airlift Wing, the Minnesota Air National Guard, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Baseball is part of the fabric of American life. One of the American Legion's most successful programs through the years has been Legion Baseball. In Minnesota, we have over 325 teams in nearly every community in the state, involving about 5,000 student athletes. Five of our Minnesota teams have won the National World Series. This is Peggy Moon, past department commander of the American Legion. Check out your local team and come to a game. It's some of the best baseball you'll ever see.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking to the commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota National Guard, Colonel Dan Gabrielli, and we've been learning all about the C-130s that we have out at the Fort Snelling, out at the airport, and all the federal and state missions that go on. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about, sir, is we've had a lot of the Army National Guard on the show, and they usually deploy as units, and they usually go for long periods of time. But my observation is that when the Air National Guard goes out, they go in smaller numbers and shorter deployments, but more often.
That's right, Tom. We go generally, if you're talking about our deployment cycle, it's roughly every 18 months. We go about for 120 days, and we may even break that up organically within our unit and swap some crew members at 60 days. Maintainers may stay for longer, different units inside the length of their deployment. But we do go more often, but not for as long a period of time as our Army brethren.
So when they go, they take two or four aircraft and enough maintenance people and pilots and crew chiefs to do whatever the mission might be.
Everything they need to do to support a small flying operation out of one of the locations we go to. And we usually sister up with another guard unit. In fact, we always sister up with another guard unit or even two sometimes to get the mission to form a deployed squadron.
Now, do you also get some I call them onesies, but do they come to you looking for a pilot here or somebody else there and occasionally send out a few airmen by themselves?
Absolutely. If they have a shortfall, another unit does, they might advertise for it, and it's all voluntary by our folks if they want to fill a shortfall by another C-130 unit. And as well as that, we have our agile combat support sort of deployments with our other units like civil engineering, finance, any other unit on base can be tasked with a deployment. And they usually go in smaller numbers, and a lot of times they'll go for longer periods of time than the flying guys and gals. So, it seems like the flying mission gets a lot of the glamour because they go over there and do that. But there are support functions that go, in small groups for maybe longer periods of time. They don't rotate out in the middle. So those are the ones going on all the time in the base. They kind of are they fly a little bit lower below the radar, but we've got an eye on all our folks and what they do.
Sir, there have been many, many deployments since September 1 of 2001. Is it possible that there's a single airman in the 133rd Airlift Wing that doesn't know the deployments are part of what they're signing up for?
They absolutely all know what they're signing up for, Tom. Absolutely. Deployments plus a lot of the other things we do to prepare ourselves for possible contingencies and deployments.
And all of the airmen are there want to go too, don't they?
They do. That's what they sign up for. I always say that, we're all pre-9/11 people. And, that was looking back, we never want to have to go to these contingencies. We never want to have the world in a situation that requires this. But having done it, it's like being on a sort of a sports team. You practice your whole career. And then when you get to do it for real, it's very rewarding. So so the ones I'm always very, very impressed with is that I'd say, I'm just guessing, this is not scientific, but over 50% of our folks now have come in, or roughly that figure, since 9/11. And those are people that signed up with their eyes wide open, knowing what they're getting into. So it's a different breed of people, motivation-wise, that come into the Guard, and the culture of the Guard has changed significantly since 9/11.
Yeah, they're doing a fantastic job, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I can't say enough.
Now, Colonel, you brought a guest with us.
I did. Lieutenant Colonel Mike Donay, he is our Wing Inspector General. And what he's going to talk about is our new Air Force inspection system. It's basically a commander's inspection program. I know a lot of you out there listening, everybody in all components know exactly what it feels like to have an inspection and sort of the ramp up, ramp down. And the new paradigm within the Air Force right now is a constant assessment and by the commanders themselves as to what as to the wing state and all. And so it gets rid of all the multiple inspections within a wing, and it's the wing commanders and all the commanders' onus to inspect themselves. And Mike can speak so much better than I on it, and I'm just going to let him loose.
Colonel Donay, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Tom. Good to be here. Sure. Yeah, like the colonel said, it is a big change with the fact that anyone who's been in the military and has had that headquarters inspection coming, it is an ominous thing when they come in. And people get nervous, and people are wondering what's going to happen. And particularly in the Air Force, found ourselves relying more and more on headquarters telling us how well we're doing out in the field than us telling ourselves how well we're doing. And we end up falling in this trap of preparing for inspection, spending a lot of unnecessary money on things that weren't really helping us do our mission overseas, like the colonel was talking about. And so the Air Force did a big timeout a few years ago and said, how are we going to do this differently moving forward? And a big part of what they did is recognize that we need to respect the fact that some of the unintended consequences of this big system is creating unprioritized requirements on us when we don't really have the airmen to do that. We're getting smaller. And so how can we be smarter? And that's really what the system allows us to do.
And more efficient.
More efficient is a big thing. And the Secretary of the Air Force right now is really emphasizing innovation. And so how can we make every airman an innovator in a way that perhaps they didn't learn in basic training? You know, we learn to be good followers in the military, and we certainly learn to be good leaders. And yet also there's a part of us that needs to innovate. The general spoke to that in his introduction with regard to the fact that we were the first state that had the innovative thought that we could be a flying state and brought that innovative idea to the nation, which then led the way. And so really what the Secretary is asking all of our airmen to do is to think about in your area, in your shop, what can you do better? How can you save us money? How can you make your lives easier and do better for the mission at the end of the day?
So, Colonel, in the past, the Inspector General came to Minnesota, and you knew when he was coming and everybody would get ready for it. I think that's what Colonel Gabrielli was talking about. But you are a member of the 133rd Airlift Wing.
Yes.
And you're the internal Inspector General.
Yes.
So are you on a kind of a perpetual inspection process and just keep it going internally to make sure that you're always ready? Is that the goal?
That's the goal, Tom. Always ready. The mantra is we do it the compliant way every day. And we look to find ways that we're going to stop doing things that aren't value added. And there's a process in place to help make that happen. And so that's shaking things up a little bit when you can give an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old the power to say what doesn't make sense. There's a vetting process, of course, but we've stopped doing some things that just weren't helping us. There's one great story, Master Sergeant Ryan Hoffman, who is in our medical group. We have several, 1,200 people that we get to run through medical physicals to make sure we can deploy, do our wartime mission. It took a long time. And so they met, they had great teams come together and think of ways to do it better. And we've done it twice now. It slashed the amount of time that it took us to do these physicals. We do all the non-rated non-flyers within one day, 2 days at the most. And it ramped up our stats so that we were highest in the nation. So that saved us time so we could focus more on doing what we need to do for both the governor as well as the president versus spending time standing in line to get a physical done.
So, sir, it would seem to me that it would be impossible to do your job as the internal inspector general without the full support of the wing commander.
I that's absolutely right. I only do what the wing commander needs me to do and act with his intent and really support the rest of the subordinate commanders and standing up people within their squadrons to be the best that they can be.
So, Colonel, if you see a soft spot, then you whisper to the Inspector General, let's go over there and see if we can't clean that up. Is that how that works?
Well, it's kind of that way. They basically help me, keep me in line with how our processes work within the units to keep themselves self-assessed at a constant basis. They talk about undetected noncompliance, things you don't know that you're not doing right. And so I'm not saying an outside agency doesn't come in, because every 5 years the outside agency, Air Mobility Command, in our situation, does come in. But not instead of inspecting us now, they're looking at how well we inspect and assess ourselves on a constant basis. We should always be on an upward slope with making ourselves better. They're not coming in to see how we are in a snapshot at that moment. They're seeing how our processes work to keep ourselves at the highest level of excellence.
So, Colonel Donay, one last question. Do you help implement new rules as they come along as well then?
Yes. The commanders implement the rules. We make sure we come in behind and make sure that they've been implemented.
And make sure the system's in place to keep them going.
Absolutely. It's all about sustainability.
All right, sir. Colonel Gabrielli, we've only got about a minute and a half left. You've been in the military for many, many years. What would you have to say to our listeners out there all across Minnesota if they were thinking about a career in the Minnesota Air National Guard?
Well, and the listeners, it depends on their demographic, but generally we're trying to capture those young kids that are just out of high school or ones that are coming out of college looking for commissioning opportunities. I think that just the knowledge, when I went in active duty, I didn't really know what the Guard was. I loved my active duty time. I loved just as much of my Guard time for different reasons. But to know that all the benefits that are out there for them to get real skills, form camaraderie, be a part of something larger than themselves. And then there's all the tertiary things like the educational benefits. I mean, when you look at exactly what we have to offer and what they can get out of it and we can glean from their expertise as well, it's just, I mean, it just needs to be out there and known. And I know we're in a state where there's no active duty bases, so I think our bases, us in the reserves, stay a little bit more hidden. And I think it's just a matter of letting the folks out there know what's going on. And also people coming off active duty, their home state's Minnesota. There's a skill set that probably exists in our wing for them. And we've had very robust recruiting retention, and we've done very well with manning. But you can always use more best and brightest, and we're in a great demographic area for that.
You've always got, every year you've got people retiring and getting to the end of their careers. You have to keep filling in and training and training for the next generation.
Absolutely. It's a never-ending constant cycle, and we always try to stay ahead of the curve on that.
Colonel, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, I mean, I appreciate the time here. I appreciate the show. I would like to point out that, as I was pointing out before, in addition to all our contingency deployments, we're doing constant deployments to keep ourselves prepared and ready, and we're making sure that we're participating in different parts of the world that could possibly be strategically important to us in the future. So everybody thinks of us as doing the warfighting mission, but we're doing a lot of training and exercising. We have a high operations tempo.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Mike Donay and Colonel Daniel Gabrielli, the wing commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Minnesota National Guard. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to learn how the recent stand down here in Minneapolis went and how we're helping to try to eliminate veteran homelessness. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Today's Yellow Ribbon Spotlight is the Mall of America. As a leader in retail, entertainment, and attractions, the Mall of America continually showcases their ongoing support for our nation's military. Their annual Holiday for Heroes event provides an opportunity for over 3,000 military families to come together to enjoy Nickelodeon Universe and connect with resources. This year, the Mall of America will help sponsor Minnesota Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair. In addition to developing strong veteran recruiting and hiring practices, they honor and recognize their employees who have and continue to serve in the Armed Forces. Mall of America has been a Yellow Ribbon company since January of 2014 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to discuss the recent stand down here in Minneapolis with Eric Grumdahl. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
A few weeks ago, Minnesota businesses, state leaders, and veterans came together to address one important topic, veterans employment. The 10th annual Minnesota Veterans Career Fair symbolizes the partnership between the public and private sector. More than 240 private companies, nonprofit organizations, educational institutions, service providers, and government agencies participated. Support like this is important because it provides resources for both employers and veterans. I want to especially thank all the employers who participated in this event, which was the largest ever. Together, we will bring our veterans all the way home.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. The Homeless Veteran Registry works by connecting federal, state, county, and nonprofit partners in a shared goal of providing housing and services to veterans and their families. Once a veteran is in the registry, these partners work together in a case management approach to create successful and sustainable housing solutions. Veterans can join the registry directly or be referred. Anyone who knows of a homeless veteran is encouraged to call 1-888-LINK-VET. That's 1-888-LINK-VET. Or visit the registry webpage at minnesotaveteran.org. Joining me now is Eric Grumdahl, who is a special advisor on ending veteran homelessness here in Minnesota. And Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Tom. Happy to be here.
Eric, the last couple of days, Tuesday and Wednesday of this prior week, we had what's called a stand down out at the Minneapolis Boy Scout Base Camp. Can you explain to our listeners, what does that term stand down mean? Where did it come from?
Happy to. Yes, the stand down is a is an old school one-stop shop approach where by having all the services and resources that a veteran facing a housing crisis or experiencing homelessness might need in one place under one roof, all organized to be available to them the minute they walk in the door, that's really the vision of Stand Down. Stand Down is a national model. It's funded in part by the Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor, and MACV, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, organizes the Stand Down events all throughout the state, including the one that happened on Tuesday and Wednesday down at the base camp.
And, of course, the term Stand Down, as I understand it, came from my generation, Vietnam veterans, when they were out in the bush and for weeks and then sometimes they'd come back to a base camp and they'd be able to get clean clothes and get showers and get washed up and get food, rest, and get ready to go again. So it's really the kind of a term that is a great term to use when we're talking about getting our homeless veterans off the street and getting them some help, as something as little as a shower and a haircut, and then trying to get them back on their feet, correct?
That's right. And I think the ability, we had 90 organizations that participated in the Stand Down on Tuesday and Wednesday. The ability for anybody to walk in and get connected with all those resources in one place, in one visit, is really just a tremendous opportunity for any homeless veteran. The other thing we did this year that's new and I think worked really well was we organized an intake process so that any veteran coming in the door, if they were facing a housing crisis or experiencing homelessness, they immediately got to talk to all the individuals who could actually organize a housing plan for them. So if they didn't have their DD-214, be able to pull their discharge information, be able to make sure that if they weren't already connected to benefits, they had that process laid out. Really the most important piece, figuring out what their path would be back into housing, working right there on site with the social workers and outreach workers and housing locators whose job it is to help those vets find housing.
Now, Eric, from when you were on, you've been on the show in the past and we've talked about this, but one of the things that seems important to me is to try to determine what started the spiral for the veteran in the first place that caused them to be homeless. And I know that we've talked in the past about maybe it was a legal issue or maybe it was something else. You've actually got judges and some legal people out at these stand-downs to help with some of those issues, don't you?
That's right. MACV organizes a legal clinic and a court that operates right on site. There's an employment clinic. There's a physical health clinic as well that VA operates. So if a veteran had a physical health issue, if they needed optical care, dental care, that can all be arranged right on site at this event. So was really a tremendous opportunity for vets to come in. And what MACV has seen over the years is that there are veterans that will come to the Stand Down event who may not engage in any other way that could also connect them with those supports. So it's just an absolutely critical venue for making sure that vets get access to what they've earned.
Now, Eric, when we've talked about this in the past, I've kind of, in my mind, divided those homeless veterans into two categories. One is the folks that by some accident, some occurrence, something happened, they got in that downward spiral and they want to get out. And those veterans that want to get back on their feet, you've got everybody there to help them with that. But there's probably a few of them that just don't care anymore and they're there to get some clean clothes and leave. Are there a few of them that are happy being homeless or just don't want to get back into society?
So what we have found consistently is that for any vet experiencing homelessness, it's really around making sure that you're presenting an option that works, that makes sense. And so for vets that have tried or been through a lot of different services and not kind of found the option that connects, our job as the team that's working to get them housed, our job is to come up with another option that works better. And what we found is that for every single veteran out there, however, you know, initially they might say, oh, I'm not interested in what you've got to offer. If we can find the option that actually works, we're able to get to a housing outcome. So the way that we talk about this is we've shown that we can house anybody, and now our challenge is to house everybody. And that's really where we're making remarkable progress. Just in the last 18 months, we've been able to house 608 veterans. So we do this annual count that's kind of the national barometer of how we're doing. That's shown that since 2010, we've decreased veteran homelessness by 57%. We were joined at this stand-down event by HUD Secretary Castro, who was here partly to talk about not only the progress in Minnesota but the progress nationally, where we've cut veteran homelessness across the country almost in half by 47%. So Minnesota's ahead of that curve. But really the challenge now is we also know 219 vets as of Monday morning who are still experiencing homelessness. Our job is to make sure that every one of those and every other vet we identify gets connected quickly with the housing that they need and deserve.
So you need to connect with those 200 or so and make it easy for them and get them a door. We talked about how important it is to have a door that you can close and have some security, and even if it's a closet, just a place of your own.
Well, and as you can imagine, if you think about trying to do anything else in your life without having a foundation of housing as the platform to think about, you know, tackling all those other responsibilities, very difficult to think about how you would do that without housing stability. So housing stability is absolutely key.
So once again, if any of our listeners out there know of a homeless veteran, get a hold of the Homeless Veteran Registry at 1-888-LINK-VET or visit the registry webpage at minnesotaveteran.org. Get them on the list. Eric and his folks will get in contact with them, make it as easy as they can for them to get back on their feet and get some housing and start getting back into society.
And as you led off with, Tom, this has been a really tremendous team effort. The federal VA has been an amazing partner, MACV, a whole host of other nonprofit organizations. It's been all of us coming together and having this shared process where we all commit to doing whatever we can to make sure that number of homeless veterans keeps driving down towards zero. That's what we're aiming for. But we also know that the minute we reach that goal, it isn't about wrapping up. We have to sustain this capacity to be able to house any vet facing a housing crisis so that the next day somebody faces a housing crisis. Ideally, it doesn't lead to homelessness. But if it does, we're there to rapidly get that vet back connected with housing.
Hopefully we can catch him before it gets that bad.
That's right.
And help him out. Now, once again, 1-888-LINK-VET. You've got we've just got about a minute and a half left. You've got some more stand-downs coming up around the state.
That's right. So again, MACV organizes these events all over the state. And so the stand-downs that are coming up include in Bemidji on September 29th, Bemidji on September 28th, Grand Rapids on September 29th, Marshall on October 12th, and Mankato on November 9th. So any veterans in those areas facing a housing crisis, needing to be connected with resources, it's a great place to go. One-stop shop, get everything you need.
And if our listeners didn't get that, is there a website they can go to find all those dates and places?
You can go to mac-v.org and click on the upcoming events link.
And you always need some more volunteers at those stand-downs as well.
That's right. And you can contact MACV to let them know that you'd be interested. We'd be happy to have you part of the team.
Eric, great job finding housing for over 600 veterans in the last year. I hope that number goes down because there aren't as many homeless veterans to find, but you're doing a great job, and we appreciate your coming back on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you so much, Tom.
That was Eric Grumdahl, the Special Advisor on Ending Veteran Homelessness on Minnesota Military Radio. And remember, if you do know a homeless veteran, call 1-888-LINK-VET or visit the registry webpage at minnesotaveteran.org. Please stay with us. In a moment, we'll hear from the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio.
Hello, this is Stephen Whited, Adjutant of the DAV Minnesota, looking for volunteer drivers to help transport our Minnesota veterans to their appointments at VA medical facilities around the state. The DAV Minnesota has provided vans for this use and work with our county veteran service officers, provides transportations to get our veterans to their medical appointments. We need volunteer drivers all over Minnesota. Please call the DAV Minnesota headquarters to help with this mission. Please call 651-291-1212 or visit davmn.org. Please volunteer today.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to be joined by the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to the show and in studio today.
Hey, thanks, Tom. It's great to be here. And once again, great to be in studio. I always love the opportunity to get in here to see you.
Well, it's kind of fun seeing an Army Sergeant Major interact with a couple of Air Force officers today.
Well, you know, we like to have a little bit of fun and they're both great guys. So, yeah, it was a good time.
All right, sir. Now we're back to the business of the Army. I understand you've been traveling. The last couple of times we had you on the show, you had to call in. What kind of travel schedule have you had?
Well, it's been a busy couple of months. I just got back from Croatia, where I think the last time we spoke, we talked about celebrating our 20th anniversary of the state partnership program. So I was in Croatia celebrating that event, and what a wonderful time that was.
Now, Sergeant Major, I understand, I don't know if our listeners know this, but I understand that the different state National Guard units have different partners over in Europe. Is that true?
That's right. Every state is partnered with a country, and we work closely together, military to military, and eventually that relationship builds into civilian-to-civilian interactions as well.
And we've had 20 years with Croatia, but we've had over 40 years, I think, with Norway, haven't we?
That's right. I think we're hitting 44 years now of a bilateral agreement with Norway.
And both of those engagements with those countries have been fantastic, haven't they?
We have got a fantastic relationship with both those countries, and maybe I'm a little biased, but I believe that Minnesota has gotten the best deal out of all the states in the United States because we've got just two beautiful countries that we get to go and visit and just great people, soldiers, that we get to deal with as well.
And, of course, a lot of Norwegians have settled in Minnesota over the decades, and so that seems like a natural partnership, doesn't it?
Yeah, they sure have, and yes, it is.
All right. Well, that exchange, maybe the next time they come over, we can get some of those Norwegian officers back on the show. We haven't had them on the show for about 3 years now.
Well, we'll have to work on that. We just had a summer exchange this year with Norway, and in February of 17, we'll go back to a winter rotation. So we'll have to try to get that done.
Now, Sergeant Major, you brought a guest with you today. Do you want to introduce her?
Yeah, so it's great to have Staff Sergeant Beth Dedek along with me. You know, we've talked about who keeps us in line, and at home we have what I like to call Household 6, and in my case, Lori, she keeps me in line there, but at work I need someone to do the same thing for me, just at a different level. So Staff Sergeant Beth Dedek is the one that helps to take care of my travels, all of the arrangements to get to me where I need to be on time, and so I rely on her very heavily to do that for me.
Sergeant Dedek, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here.
Now, the Command Sergeant Major makes it sound like you're the scheduler, and you have to keep the trains running on time.
I do try, but he makes it pretty easy for me.
All right, Sergeant Major. Now, you recently just hired Sergeant Dedek. You must have had some change in your assistant there, executive assistant, that helps you keep on time?
Yeah, unfortunately, my last assistant lost her battle to cancer, and after 6 years of fighting, she passed away. And so we went through a period of time where we had to search out the right person to take this role on, and Staff Sergeant Dedek came with very high recommendations, and I did a personal interview, and without a doubt, she was the right person to take on that role.
So how do you go about that process? Do you reach out to different commands and tell them you're looking for a new executive assistant and see if anyone's got suggestions?
That's exactly what happened. You know, I've got my trusted agents within the Minnesota National Guard, and so I just said, here's what I'm looking for, here's what I need, the type of personality I'm looking for, and I got a list of names, and I started sorting through those names, their records, looking at what they've done, where they've been, and narrowed it down to two people, and interviewed both of those soldiers, and I selected Sergeant Dedek.
So, Sergeant Dedek, when did you first realize he was considering you?
In all honesty, about 2 days before he sent me an email, I got a warno that I may or may not get a phone call, but I had no clue why. But they just told me not to freak out if the senior enlisted advisor contacted me. So I was kind of on pins and needles about that. And then lo and behold, I got an email from Sergeant Major Wortham asking if I was available to come and meet with him. And then I really started sweating bullets.
So you got an email saying report to the Command Sergeant Major's office.
It was nicer than that, but yes.
Now, Tom, I did put a caveat in that email, and I said, don't worry, you're not in trouble.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. That could make somebody nervous, couldn't it?
Yes, indeed.
That was the best part of the email. It really made me feel better.
So how did that interview go?
It went okay. I was very, very nervous the entire time, just because I wasn't exactly sure why I was there. And my first thought was, oh my goodness, what have one of my soldiers done? Why am I going to the senior enlisted advisor's office? And so, you know, as I got up there and we started talking, the great thing about Sergeant Major Wortham is he has a way of just putting you at ease. So that helped me kind of calm down and make it through that interview, so to speak.
So then it didn't take too long, and you got hired as the executive assistant to the command sergeant major.
I did. Yes, Tom.
And what are the responsibilities that go along with that position?
Well, like Sergeant Major said, I work on his calendar, keeping his schedule in line. People will reach out to me when they need to get some time with him. I set all of his travel up and make sure that he can get where he needs to go as smoothly as possible. And then I assist with all the other little things that come up with the meetings and conferences, and you know, the other sergeant majors that he deals with. If they need additional help, I'm there to help them as well.
Now, Sergeant Major, I can't help it, but it seems like that's just somebody cleaning up after you're out there marching people around. But in reality, you travel quite a bit and visit with the various commands quite a bit, and so it's probably hard to reach you.
It is, and you know what I try to do with Staff Sergeant Dedek is make sure she's in tune with what's going on with me, so that when I'm out of the office, she can be contacted, and you know, we're talking the same language when we're getting those phone calls, asking the questions, and it's great to have someone there that can kind of clean up a little bit for me too.
So, Sergeant Dedek, as you know, Command Sergeant Major is supposed to come on this show about every 4 weeks. But occasionally he's out of town. So are you going to fill in for him once in a while?
I don't think your listeners would want to listen to me every 4 weeks, sir.
Sergeant Major?
Well, I mean, if she fills in for me occasionally, I think we could let that slide. But, I mean, you know, I don't want to take away my job here.
Well, we're happy to have you on anytime, sir, whether it's calling in or coming in the studio. But it's good to see you here today, and I'm glad that you found a great new executive assistant. And I hope this one works out for as long and as well as your former one did.
Yeah, I think that we've got a great relationship already. And interestingly enough, Tom, we deployed together. We were in Iraq and I'm in Basra. And I didn't even realize that until after I had interviewed with her. And then I found out that she was one of our MPs over there.
Well, Staff Sergeant Dedek, I hope you have a great time with the Command Sergeant Major. We found him to be pretty easy to deal with on the radio over here. He kind of likes a microphone. So I don't know how often we'll get to talk to you, but good luck in that position.
Thank you, Tom.
Sergeant Major, we just got about a minute left. What's coming up?
Wow, what is coming up? Well, I'm heading back to Croatia. I see you rolling
duty,
your eyes.
The light duty again.
Going to head over to Croatia. Croatia sponsors a non-commissioned officer leadership program. And so I'm going to be bringing a couple of soldiers with over for a few days here at the end of the month, where they get to interact with some of our other international soldiers out of the UCOM and NATO. And so I'll be doing that. And then later on next month, I've got a trip scheduled to go into Slovenia. And after that, I'm sure that Sergeant Dedek will find something else to put on my calendar.
Sergeant Dedek, I think we're going to have you back on the show quicker than you think with all this travel and this easy travel that the Sergeant Major is going on. But, well, duty calls, right, sir?
It's tough duty, but someone's got to do it, Tom.
Yes, sir. Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again in the studio today.
Well, it's great to be here, and I hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you, sir. That was the senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, along with his new executive assistant, Staff Sergeant Beth Dedek. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Dan Gabrielli, Lieutenant Colonel Mike Donay, Eric Grumdahl, Staff Sergeant Beth Dedek, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelladoe, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about some upcoming events to help our Minnesota military families. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.